This is ExpertHR.com, your go-to HR compliance resource for federal, state, and municipal law. I'm David Weisenfeld for ExpertHR.com, published by Reed Business Information and proudly partnered with LexisNexis. In today's brave new digital age, the number of people working remotely is very much on the rise. Some studies estimate that up to 30 million Americans work from home at least one day per week, and it's a trend that is sure to continue. But this virtual work world also brings along many potential compliance issues that an employer can't afford to ignore. So what does telecommuting mean for employee productivity and a company's bottom line? On this podcast, we'll ask those questions and many others as our focus turns to what telecommuting means for the workplace. And we'll do that with California employment attorney Todd Wolfson, who practices with Carruthers, DeSante, and Frudenberger in Southern California. Todd, welcome. It's great to have you on.
Thanks very much. My pleasure to be here.
Well, you're probably the perfect person to join us as someone who I understand telecommutes a good deal yourself. So with that said, do you find it's more productive to work remotely, and is it something you'd recommend as a benefit for your clients?
Yeah, I think for me personally, and certainly for my clients, it's situationally dependent. I think it can be a tremendously efficient way to get my own work done, and I know a lot of my clients find that many of their employees, it can be very efficient. You need to make an assessment first on the type of position, the type of person, and really kind of the type of company and the company culture. I don't think you can just say that any employee can work remotely and have that be effective. I think it really needs to have a significant amount of kind of thought going into it and before you even launch into some kind of a telecommuting policy or a telecommuting practice.
So it really depends on the type of job that they have.
Yeah, it depends on the type of job. It depends on the individual employees. And it depends on, you know, a lot of other things like the location of the company versus the employees. And then kind of more non-legal issues of, you know, we need to get more effective employees. Do we need to go beyond kind of our employee catchment area? And the only way we're going to do that is a lot of them to work remotely. So there's some kind of psychological and economic factors at play in as well as the legal factors.
Well, a couple of years ago, Yahoo CEO Marissa Mayer attracted a good deal of publicity when she announced that her company was abolishing its work-at-home policy. Yahoo has since reportedly relaxed that prohibition slightly, but considering that this is a company whose existence stems from the internet age, the announcement at the time seemed a bit baffling. What was your take on all of that?
Yeah, I think Yahoo and a lot of the tech companies are struggling with the difference between the cool factor and the economic reality or the legal reality of what they want to do. And companies in California particularly, let's face it, but for the weather, no one would have a business in California. We have really good weather, however. But we have some of the most stringent wage and hour laws in the nation. And a lot of companies that wanted to be cool, wanted to have the trendy type of environment and everyone working remotely, changed their tune when they got hit with a lot of class actions for wage and hour compliance issues, where the employees that were working at home were all of a sudden suing for missed meal breaks, unpaid overtime, and lots of other issues. And a lot of companies have radically changed their views on that and kind of gone back to a more cautious approach. Kind of what I was saying earlier on is that you really need to look at the individual position, the individual employees, and then balance all that with, you know, some of the company cultural issues.
Well, Todd, that was an absolutely perfect segue to my next question, because there's no doubt that California has been a trendsetter in employment law for quite some time. And it depends which side you're on, I suppose, whether that's a good thing or a bad thing. But in terms of telecommuting, are there factors at work there specifically that discourage employers from allowing their workers to telecommute?
Yeah, absolutely. The biggest thing I would say is the daily overtime rules in California. There's really only three states in the nation that still have daily overtime, and California is so extraordinarily progressive, but I mean, it's in there with Montana and Alaska in terms of daily overtime. There's a couple other states that have a little bit here and there, but for the most part, the vast majority of the nation follows the federal overtime rule that says basically you don't get paid overtime unless you work more than 40 hours in a week, which is great for a telecommuting type of situation because you can work 10-hour days Monday through Thursday and then have a three-day weekend. California, not only do we have an 8-hour workday where overtime has to be paid for more than 8 hours in a day, but you also have to require employees to get a 10-minute break every 4 hours and a half-hour meal period every 5 hours they work. And if someone is working remotely it's really difficult to monitor that and make sure that the employee is getting those breaks and getting those meal periods. And if they don't, they can just wait up to, and the statute of limitations is 3 years, and it's not just one employee that winds up suing you. It's one employee on behalf of all of your employees suing you. Those can be extraordinarily expensive lawsuits that, you know, really give a lot of companies pause in terms of allowing employees to work remotely, unless they are truly exempt from overtime. Unless they've done that, it's a huge risk. And then you add on to that the workers' comp and some of the other issues, it just creates a potential legal nightmare and a very expensive proposition.
Very interesting. Well, what are some other employment law risks that HR professionals really need to keep their eye on when it comes to telecommuting?
Our workers' comp system is not exactly the most employer-friendly. There's a reason why a lot of companies are moving to Texas and Georgia and Arizona and states that, you know, actually encourage employers to come there. If you've got an employee working at home, they're in their own living room in their pajamas working on their computer. But if they get injured, it's a workers' comp situation. So you don't know what their living room looks like. You don't have any idea. You know, if they got 50 cats running around, they're tripping over. But that's your liability. Similarly, if you've got an employee working at home using their dining room table chair to spend, you know, 8 hours a day working on their computer, that might not necessarily be the most ergonomically reliable situation for them, and they may wind up injuring their back, or they may wind up getting some kind of a long-term disability issue. A lot of companies have found that to have people telecommuting, they literally need to send someone out to their home and do a survey and check it out and make sure that it's a safe and helpful work environment for the telecommuting employee, and they'll oftentimes wind up buying them a chair or buying them ergonomic equipment so that they can take care of all that. And most states don't require that. California is fairly unique in that regard. That's another barrier for a lot of employers to want to jump on the telecommuting bandwagon.
Well, it certainly sounds like there are some risks, but at the same time, is an employer that discourages telecommuting putting itself at a competitive disadvantage in terms of attracting talent? For instance, if my rival is willing to let employees work from home, or at least not limit itself to hiring people who live within 40 minutes or so, it seems they're going to have a much broader pool of candidates.
Yeah, I think that's true. I think that's one of the issues that companies need to balance. I mean, if you're in a large metropolitan area, and you're advertising for positions, I don't think you're going to have a hard time finding, you know, several hundred people, particularly in this economy, that want to apply for that job. But if your company is in a more remote location, it may be impractical or impossible to limit yourself to, you know, a 30 or 40 or 50 mile radius, because the talented people that you need may very well be farther out. You may have to offer that. For people that are, you know, in the Bay Area or Los Angeles metropolitan area, you know, big cities, I don't think it's as much of a problem. But you're absolutely right with respect to, you know, companies that are in smaller towns or more distant locales. And then there's also kind of, I said, the cool factor. And you mentioned kind of, what if my rival is doing this? I think that there are a lot of types of positions, particularly in the software industry, a lot of creative types that work well in small groups, but they also work well in small groups when they're networked together on the internet. They don't necessarily physically need to be together. And there's something to be said about, you know, kicking back in your pajamas and having a leftover pizza and a Mountain Dew for breakfast and putting in your eight-hour workday. A lot of companies and a lot of employees like to do that, but that I think that is endemic to a certain industry and certain types of jobs. You're not going to have a whole lot of people that it's even pragmatic for them to be wearing their pajamas to work.
Again, we're speaking with employment attorney Todd Wolfson, who practices with Carruthers, DeSante, and Frudenberger in Southern California. Todd, what are some proactive steps an employer can take in terms of monitoring and also ensuring that a telecommuter is a productive part of the team?
That's a good question, because monitoring, particularly in California, is a whole other potential wasp nest of legal problems. California is one of the only states that is actually part of our Constitution. It's Article 1, Section 1 that says that every citizen of California has an inalienable right of privacy. And the courts have construed that extraordinarily broadly. So any kind of monitoring that an employer wants to do, just to make sure that the person's actually working, for example, you know, we want to monitor your computer. We want to monitor your emails. We want to monitor your cell phone. We want to have a GPS tracker on your car to make sure that when you're going out on sales calls, you really are going on sales calls. All of those things have a perfectly legitimate business use, namely to, you know, make sure the employee is doing what they say they're doing, but also can be used for more nefarious purposes if you're monitoring them on their lunch break or monitoring them after hours. I think what a company first needs to do is decide which positions they can afford or they want or they need to have telecommuting, and then put together some kind of a monitoring program that is, you know, the least intrusive as possible. And some very good ones out there, you know, where people will log in and, you know, they're either on a instant message chat where, you know, they're talking to their employees, or if there's no activity for, you know, 5 minutes or 10 minutes, the computer prompts you. And then if you don't click on that, then someone somewhere knows that you're not really working, or at least you're not paying attention to your monitor anymore. But it really depends on the type of position. But there are a lot of very good monitoring programs out there. It gets a little ridiculous when you're literally putting a GPS tracker on the person's smartphone, or you're putting it on their car, and you're monitoring all their comings and goings throughout the day. That can create a whole new area of liability.
Todd, in terms of policies, if a client were to come to you and say, hey, I'd really like some help in drafting a telecommuting policy, what's a must-have that this type of policy should include?
I think the first thing they need to make a decision as to what positions they're going to have. So let's say the positions that lend themselves best to telecommuting are like sales, anything that's creative, so writing, software development, coding, things like that. The best thing to include in the policy at that point is just, you know, make sure that you're creating an environment that allows the employee to have that, you know, creative outlet, but you also make sure that they're actually working. So the best thing to do is to have an established objective criteria for what the performance needs to be. So you tell the employees, well, you know, we anticipate that you're gonna sell this quota. You're gonna work remotely, but if you're not selling at this level, we're gonna have a conversation and we're gonna talk about why, and if the answer's not effective enough, you may be looking for another job. Or if you're a writer or you're developing code or you're working on software, I think you need to have some kind of an objective criteria in the policy so the employee knows up front, you know, this is the expectation of me. I can work wherever I want, but I'm still going to be monitored, I'm still going to be managed, and I'm still going to be expected to perform at a certain level. I think that's eminently better than having a program that says, you know, every 5 minutes you got to press your space bar to make sure you're still logged on, because, you know, anybody can do that. Any kind of monitoring that's going to be done absolutely needs to be in the policy, and the employee needs to be told right up front, look, you know, because you're telecommuting, we're going to be monitoring what your computer, when it's logged onto our server, is doing. We're going to be monitoring, you know, where you go, because you're telling us you're working, so we're going to spot check every once in a while and make sure you're not playing fantasy football or streaming live video or something that you're not supposed to be doing. And similarly with your emails, if you're going to be a telecommuter, we may choose to monitor your emails or your instant messaging to make sure that when you say you're working, you're actually communicating with your colleagues and communicating with customers. You need to make sure that, you know, just because you have the right to read emails, that you don't read all of them. You don't read emails from spouses and things like that. But I think the employee needs to be told right up front in the policy, here are the expectations, here's how we're going to monitor you, and here's what we're going to do if we or you find that the telecommuting is not working out as well as it can or as well as it should.
In terms of these policies, if my company allows someone who works 90 minutes away to telecommute most of the week, does it also have to let a worker telecommute who's just 10 minutes down the road? In other words, do these policies have to be applied uniformly, or could there be one set of rules for certain employees and another for others?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think the most important thing in any HR-related employment law situation is that you apply the rules consistently. Employers get themselves in trouble when they stop being consistent. You've got one manager in Southern California treating employees differently than a manager in Northern California. It's the same company. It's the same policy. The telecommuting policy, that is probably the number one area of liability, is not applying the rules uniformly. There's three different levels that they look at for purposes of applying a telecommuting policy, and as you move from one to three, the liability gets much greater. And the first is you say, these sales positions are telecommuting available positions. So if you'd like to telecommute, you can. Anybody that is in this position can opt to telecommute. That's safe, that's uniform, that's consistently applied. The second level is they say, well, we're only going to allow a certain percentage of our employees to telecommute, which works out great if you're working at the company now. It's not so great if you get hired on 2 years, 2 years later and you're a perfect candidate, because then they can say this was a non-discriminatory policy when we put it into place. However, several years down the road, it may wind up being discriminatory because people that really need to telecommute aren't able to telecommute, and those that objectively don't need to are still being allowed to do it because they just were in the right place at the right time. And then the third area where I think employers get in the most trouble is they say, we're going to make a telecommuting assessment based on an individual's needs or the individual application for telecommuting. And then you wind up with people that you're going to have demographic issues, you're going to have child care issues, which may necessarily be marital status issues, you're going to have issues with respect to medical condition and disabilities and things like that, where one person's going to be deemed to have a more significant need because of their medical condition than someone else. That leads to very emotional, hard feelings, contacting lawyers, and next thing you know, you're spending a lot of money on litigation. So the safest thing for an employer to do is say, this position is eligible for telecommuting, or this location is eligible for telecommuting, and you do it in an objective, non-discriminatory way. As you get down the road more toward an individual assessment or an ad hoc assessment, you're asking for a jury of 12 licensed drivers to step in later and determine whether or not that was reasonable.
Shifting gears, one area that I wanted to ask you about involves telecommuting and the Americans with Disabilities Act, because the Sixth Circuit Court of Appeals ruled just last year in EEOC versus Ford that telecommuting may be a reasonable accommodation under the ADA. How significant do you see that ruling being for employers?
I think it is significant. I don't think it really changed the law as much as it enunciated what everyone, all prudent employers, had already been doing. Again, since California has its own discrimination laws, we've got the Fair Employment and Housing Act, which an employer in California has to comply with that, as well as Title VII of the Civil Rights Act. So we've got the DFEH, the Department of Fair Employment and Housing here, as well as the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission, the EEOC, saying that it might be a reasonable accommodation under the ADA doesn't necessarily change the metric, because California, we already have a more stringent law. We already have a rule that says you have to accommodate medical conditions as well as disabilities. So I think across the nation, the EEOC versus Ford was a significant ruling. But in California, I really don't think it moved the needle much, because we were already dealing with a more stringent standard anyway. But I think it is an important factor for an employer to take a look at, to say that telecommuting for someone who has a medical condition or someone that has a disability may be a way of having an exception to what we were talking about just a little bit ago. Namely, you've got a policy that says, well, we don't allow telecommuting for these positions, or we don't allow telecommuting for for these types of people, but we'll make an exception if it's to accommodate someone for their disability or for their medical condition. That may very well protect you from some other claim that an employee might bring, where an employee that would really love to telecommute because of child care issues, let's say, he or she wants to bring a lawsuit saying, you've discriminated against me because of my child care or my marital status, and we say, our policy is we only allow telecommuting for these positions unless we've created an exception because it's mandated under either federal or California law that we accommodate this person's disability. So if you can rise to that level, disability is a greater need for the individual than child care, for example, or a greater need than I live an hour away in Los Angeles traffic. I think everyone will recognize that a disability or medical condition is something that's more important, and now you've got a very strong case that says you have to comply with that. You have to accommodate where you can. I think that helps employers.
Todd, are there any other ADA-related issues or discrimination issues generally that you're seeing with telecommuting?
The reasonable accommodation standard is one that all employers need to be cognizant of. I think the biggest change that I'm seeing that's ADA-related, this is going to sound a little counterintuitive, but it's medical marijuana. That's popping up all over the place with people claiming that, I have a medical marijuana card and I need it because of my glaucoma, insomnia, anxiety, whatever the issue is. There's an underlying requirement that the employer accommodate the disability or the medical condition, even though they don't have to accommodate the possession, the use, or the intoxication of marijuana in the workplace. And that's generating probably more liability and more confusion than any other area I can think of right now. And it's related to the ADA, because the person, for example, comes in and says, hey, I've got glaucoma. When I have significant pain, I need to go and use my vaporizer to ingest some medical marijuana. That's the only thing that makes me feel better. Will you accommodate that? Well, the person's asking a whole bunch of different questions. I mean, the answer needs to be, well, we'll accommodate your glaucoma and we'll do whatever we can to provide you with a reasonable accommodation, but we don't allow you to be, under the influence at work. However, most employers don't answer at that level of sophistication. A lot of times the manager will say, look, you can't be stoned at work. You got to be kidding me. And I know you can't smoke at work or something like that. Well, the person wasn't saying, can I smoke at work? The person was saying, I need to self-medicate sometimes. And maybe the answer is, okay, you need to go home at 2 o'clock in the afternoon to self-medicate. That might be a reasonable accommodation. That's probably the biggest area, particularly with Colorado and Washington legalizing for recreational use now, that's creating more confusion and liability for employers.
Well, we only have about a minute or so left, so Todd, do you have any final takeaway that you'd like to leave our listeners with on this issue?
Sure. In California, I think it needs to be a kind of a comprehensive assessment of the type of physician, and you need to balance the cost-benefit analysis. One of the costs you need to balance are a lot of these issues I like to refer to as kind of stealth liability. There's wage and hour laws, there's workers' comp, there's other things out there that really can create a significant cost that employers need to take into account. And the final thing, that if you've got people that are working remotely, that are working outside of their normal recruiting area, keep in mind in California, those people need to be paid for the travel time beyond their normal commute. So if they're working remotely by driving 3 hours out and their normal commute is a half hour, that's 2.5 hours of travel time. That's a big area in California that people just miss related to telecommuting.
Again, Todd Wolfson practices with Carruthers, DeSante, and Frudenberger in Southern California, where he represents employers. Todd, thanks so much for your insights on telecommuting.
Oh, my pleasure. Thanks for having me.
I'm David Weisenfeld. We hope you've enjoyed this podcast. Continue checking our website regularly for more programs on hot-button employment topics affecting the world of HR. Another recent podcast features FMLA compliance tips to steer clear of trouble. The opinions expressed in this program do not represent legal advice, nor should they necessarily be taken as the views of Expert HR or its employees. ExpertHR.com is published by Reed Business Information and is proudly partnered with LexisNexis. For more information about Expert HR, our subscription offering, or our new 50-state employee handbook resource, call us toll-free at 1-855-973-7847. Again, that's 1-855-973-7847. Copyright 2015, all rights reserved.